Body, Mind, Spirit Radio, your live connection to the information for a healthy body, an enlightened mind, and a renewed spirit.
Happy Wednesday, everyone, and welcome to Journey into Oneness, the show designed to help you open your heart, relax your mind, and expand your spirit during these ever-challenging, changing times. I am your host, Darlene Soa, and I'm really excited today that you tuned in because we have an amazing guest, Catherine Samuelson, who will share her insights on how we can open our heart and see possibilities instead of acting or failing to act out of fear. But first, as always, I'd like to share a short story with you. This is a story about Mark, a young man who has had and continues to have tremendous physical challenges with his body. Yet, in spite of his challenges, through all of the challenges, challenges that would really crumble the spirit of most people, Mark has demonstrated an unsurpassed level of unwavering strength and courage. And although his physical abilities are currently quite limited, he continues to keep his heart open and his mind focused only on the good in life. He's never wavered in his belief that faith can guide you gracefully through all of life's challenges. I've had the privilege of working with him these past few years and am always inspired by his deep faith, the tremendous strength and courage that he shows daily, and his huge loving heart. Mark is a beautiful example of what it means to live with an open heart. So thank you, Mark, for enriching our lives through your willingness to take on life's challenge with such grace, such deep faith, and such a beautiful loving spirit. And that brings us to today's guest. Catherine Samuelson is a highly attuned intuitive who channels the angels and guides of her clients to help them navigate through life's challenges. She's also an effective and motivational life coach. She specializes in helping those who are undergoing a transition in their lives, which is probably about all of us right now, whether that is a move, a career change, or a loss of some type. She's also the co-creator of Opening the Heart, Meditations on How to Be, a book of exquisite meditation images and accompanying texts. Catherine's unique combination of skills, training, and compassion allow her to ask the questions that need to be asked and to provide the support and guidance her clients are seeking. So, Catherine, welcome to the show.
Thank you for letting me be on your show, Darlene. I'm really looking forward to our discussion.
Oh, I'm sure that I am as well, and I'm sure everyone in our audience is. Now, one of the things I noticed in looking over your bio is that you started off as a lawyer. Now, that's a pretty far stretch. Tell us about that journey from practicing law to working as a psychic and life coach.
Well, I went to law school because I had a self-designed liberal arts major from Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, and literally was walking down the street one day when I was in my junior year and going, oh, what am I going to do? How am I going to make a living? And I sort of sorted in my head and went, okay, I'm going to go to law school. I'm not following my sisters through whatever they're doing anymore. I'm not, don't have the math skills to do the science for medical school. My dad was a doctor. And you didn't have to do math for law school.
I love that.
And it was a good career, but right in the 90s, I started, I read a book called Ask Your Angels, and it had a set of divination cards that you could make for yourself. I'm sure there were tarot cards out there. I wasn't aware of them. It was probably in the days before, anybody in the metaphysical community, you'd say Doreen Virtue, and they go, Yeah, you know, so there weren't all the cards out there. And so I made my own set of cards. And I was also consulting through a gentleman by the name of Mike Traub, a channel being by the name of O'Brien. And both O'Brien and the cards were talking about my doing what's called automatic writing. Excuse me. Some people call it inspirational writing. You take a pen in hand, or pencil in hand, you open yourself up, and you just let go, and the angels and guides come in and start to write. And I explored that more and more. And in 2004, I left the job I was in and moved from Chicagoland to Massachusetts and tried to get a job. And, you know, was told, well, you're not from here, even by people who weren't originally from here but had been there 25 years. Or I didn't have, in legal parlance, a book of business to bring to a firm. Or I had too many years of experience but not in the right thing. So I went, okay, universe, you're telling me it's time to do something else. So I, you know, came out of the closet, so to speak, as a psychic, intuitive, and also got certified as a life coach in 2007. And that is, I think, the short version.
Okay. So you were a lawyer up until around 2004, 2005?
Four. Yeah, well, I had a little solo practice from 2004
okay.
to 2007. But it was just like, it made me nervous not having, you know, backup, not having somebody to discuss things with. So, and I couldn't get a job in law. So, well, there you go. You know, the universe was going, not anymore. And I listened. Part of the problem is people, even if you're not doing what I do, you'll have an intuition about something and you won't follow it. Even psychics, intuitives will get something and we won't follow it.
And then you go,
oh, rats, why didn't I pay attention?
So that's why the universe sort of manipulates things that, you know, no, we don't want her to work in this area anymore, so let's just make it difficult where she has to utilize her skills. So what sort of lessons did you learn in this journey going from being a lawyer to really honoring your psychic abilities?
That you really have to practice. You know, that people, you know, who follow the secret, which is envision it, well, you also have to do the work. So I came up with this phrase, practicing radical ambiguity and radical persistence. Because when you move through into something new, you know, everything is maybe a little insecure, it's ambiguous how it's going to work out. So you have to radically live with that ambiguity, so to speak. But it's also that radical persistence, just keeping at it, and following curiosity, and just, as the first meditation in the book says, breathe deeply, breathe slowly. You can breathe through anything. And so it's like just keeping at it and learning to trust.
That's a big word, trust.
Yes. Again, practicing radical ambiguity and radical persistence. Because
wow.
It doesn't happen without that work.
Now, when did you first realize that you were psychic?
It was when I was working back, it was like 1992, 93, when I was, you know, had the information from O'Brien that I should try the automatic writing. And from the set of cards that I made from the Ask Your Angels book, because that's the method I use. Some people... don't need a gateway. That's my gateway. Some people do what's called psychometry. They hold an object or they hold your hand. Other people use tarot or other divination cards as their gateway. And other people, you know, maybe they do the meditation and the deep breathing and then they open their channel. It's how you open the conduit. Because really the information is you're a conduit. It's not coming from you. You know, it's coming from the universe, angels and guides, however you want to say it. For those who don't believe in angels and guides, I say it's quantum physics.
Isn't it interesting how you can just say things differently for those who come from a different background?
Right, because it's all energy. And Barbara Brown Taylor, who is a really interesting author, one of her books is called Alter in the World, has this phrase, if I get it correctly, it's the luminous web that holds everything together. So if you see yourself as like a little node on this huge luminous web spreading out throughout the universe, you know, information can flow through that web. So that's another way to view it. That we're all,
so,
you know, the, go ahead.
How, you know, you have, speaking of the luminous web, it reminds me, that helps you tap into your psychic ability, knowing that you're really connected to all
mm-hmm.
that is. How do you combine, I hear or read an awful lot of, it seems there are so many life coaches out there.
Mm-hmm.
How do you combine your psychic ability with being an effective life coach? How does that help you help others?
Because it really helps you go into yourself and really listen to yourself, listen to the others. It sometimes, ideas about how to help someone or suggestions for the person just appear. It's like, oh, goodness, where did that come from? Sometimes I will do a little bit of the channel reading for a client. And it's interesting that there are times doing a channel reading that the angels and guides are really life coachy. Or I will stop and say, you know, I'm also a life coach and it strikes me about this particular thing, blah, 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 and then go back to the reading. So I do try to keep them somewhat separate because the life coaching is a different, more ongoing relationship than, you know, channel reading. Somebody might have another reading at some point in the future, but it's not as if it's and there's different components to it. Like, as a life coach, you know, you're a nudge. You know, it's like, okay, did you get the homework done? You know, what's the reason for not getting the homework done? And sometimes you go, okay. And then if you, like, at some point, if they're not getting the homework done, you go, so what do you think is, like, keeping you from doing that? And, of course, in both roles, you know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a psychotherapist, so you have to, like, do those lines, of course.
Right. So you have clients that just come just to have someone help them connect with their guides.
Right.
And then clients that want to change some particular part in their life, and so they just need help in doing that.
Right. It's helping someone figure out, you know, if they know that something's not quite right, you know, it's like they want to make some change, helping them find the goal. But if they have a goal, like I currently have somebody who lost a job. So part of it is supporting her so she doesn't feel isolated, you know, making suggestions. She's also working with a career strategist. So it's like, okay, I don't need to do that piece, but here's an idea. Maybe you should talk to that person about it. And it's helping that person find ways to reduce expenses right now, to, okay, you know, what about this? You know, could you consider doing this, you know, and changing, you know, like you want to change what you're doing, so let's talk about that. Let's figure out steps how to do that.
Now, during both of these, you know, you utilizing your psychic ability and coaching people through life, you became a co-author of Opening the Heart, Meditations on How to Be. Wow, if there's anything that's needed right now, it's opening the heart and learning to listen to that. How did you come to write this book?
I remember this. It was May of 2007. I had a massage therapy session, and the massage therapist herself is, this is back in Massachusetts, is quite intuitive, and so she figured out it was okay for her to say that, you know, stuff that she got during sessions. And I came out from one day and said, and she looked at me and said, I think you're supposed to create a set of angel cards. And it sort of working with myself, my angels, my guides, and O'Brien, it became meditation cards. And the co-creator of the book is Linda Lewis, who is the book designer. And it took us months and just a long period of time to really get the design right for the cards. And I was going to do a separate workbook. And we sent to publishers, every publisher I could think of that would be in this area. Nobody took it. I sent to agents, and there were some agents who were interested, but they didn't know how to sell it. Da, da, da. So I finally, at some point, said to Linda, look, how about I pay you to redesign it? You know, we put everything and put it in a book instead of separate cards, and ended up self-publishing, which is a very short version of the 6.5-year journey.
That's how long it took you from the first time massage therapist says, oh, you should be writing something, to having the book in front of you.
Yeah, and we learned a lot on the process, but a lot of it was, you know, once it was in form, it was part of the process, and the length was sending it to publishers and then waiting to hear back and then dealing with agents, because, of course, agents take another piece of the pie. That's what they do. And then at that point going, oh, okay, this isn't working, and having to redesign it. So, you know, the redesign took some time, and then finding the self-publishing company that we liked, and they had a template, and Linda was able to put it into their format, so we could control the look
of
it.
Even the mechanics of getting it done. Now, for those who haven't seen the book, it's an absolutely beautiful book. It's soft cover, although it easily is can be a tabletop book. You know, it's just beautiful to look at. And it consists of gorgeous, gorgeous pictures of nature, of flowers, along with insightful messages. And can you talk a little bit about how it's designed and how it can help the reader? One of the things, for instance, that I liked about it in it has pages of just these beautiful flowers with a message, and one that hit me was, dance your body through life. And I thought, wow, is that ever a profound meaning? But then if the beautiful flower and the message doesn't incite you, you have another section where you actually have a little paragraph to help a person go through it. So can you talk a little bit more about how this is designed and maybe talk about one or two of the messages that you have in there and why those were included?
Well, frankly, a lot of it came from my angels and guides. So I suppose, you know, but it's hard to put, you know, as author Catherine Samuelson and her angels and guides on the front of the book. You know, it's like you don't want to be too off-putting to people. So the first part of the book, after the introduction, how to use the book, is 28 pairs of meditation images. And they are based on, as Linda and I say, seeming dualities, because we're so black and white as human, you know, this or that. And sometimes it's both. So, for example, I just flipped open the book, and pairs 43 and 44, one is what you want, and the other is what you need. And so you could work and sit with them. And I recommend you get a book stand so that, you know, props it up so you can really look at it. And you could work with both at once and meditate and go back and forth, or you can put a piece of paper over one of them. And you can, it's really designed to be used as how you want to use it. You could flip open the book, you know, with your eyes closed, what do I need to know, and then go left or right and look at that one. But you mentioned the additional. So then the second section of the book is a smaller version of the photo, and then text, like number 43, what you want. For many of us, we want what we want, and we want it now. And much of what we want seems to be material with a mixture of the spiritual. If you were to make a list of all the things that you want, it could be a very long list, encompassing things from the trivial to the profound. Which of these things on your list can you say yes to if you ask about each one? Will this make my life better? If so, how? Will this help me grow my spirit? If so, how? What does asking these questions do to the list of what you want? And its companion is what you need. Just as we have a long list of what we want, we can have a long list of what we think we need. We do need clean air and water, nourishing food, clothing, and a decent, safe, affordable home. We need work to provide income, and for many of us, work of the spirit. Family and friends most likely should be on everyone's list. After these, what do you truly need? If you were to make a list, the questions would be, why do I need this thing? What difference will it make to my life if I do not have this thing that I think that I need? So they're all set up like that. The dance, your body through life, which you mentioned, its pair is rest, your mind, and the one. So it's how do we, it's aimed at helping you go deeply into your heart so you can find that knowledge that resides there. I believe it's the Egyptians who thought that wisdom, you know, was in the heart. And there are people who talk about, you know, with, you know things in your gut. It's not just in the mind. So sometimes it's letting go of the mind and going deep into your heart to see what lives there. The third part of the book is a set of exercises. You know, pick a number, tell a story, what lives in, you know, what lives in your heart, connecting to the energy of the universe. And shall I tell you the story of how I came up with three questions, Darlene?
No. Why don't you do that?
Yeah, it's the last exercise in the book, and it was put in so that, you know, you could check in with yourself every once in a while. And there are three questions, and you just like the first thing that pops into your head. And I was working with a life coach myself, and we were working with her horse, who would do Reiki on you. He was very intuitive, and suddenly one day I was standing there, it was like he was asking me these questions. Who are you? What are you? You know, where are you?
This is the horse that was asking you.
Yeah, who am I? What am I? Where am I? So
wow. Those are pretty deep questions.
Mm-hmm.
So what were your answers to that?
Well, I did this so long ago. You know, it was only that I'm not sure I could tell you, and if I were to do it now, I'm sure they would be different answers. I think who am I was spirit in a body. I have to try to remember. What am I? If I were to answer that now, the first thing that popped in my head as soon as they said that question was a teacher. And where am I? Exactly where I meant to be on my path. You know, and the answers really should be different for everyone and different at different times in your life.
And these are all geared to helping us listen to and open the heart.
Yes, because we spend so much time in our heads. And it's about balance. It's about finding the way that you want to be in relation to yourself, to others, to the physical world, to the divine, and wherever that journey takes you.
Now, in addition to these beautiful photographs of pictures of the flowers in the meditations, can you go over another exercise that you have in the last part of the book that will help people open their heart?
Sure.
I know you mentioned a few others.
So one of them that I just flipped open in the book is called My Heart Story. And you would pick an image and go into meditation using that image. And then using the chosen image and text as an opening to your heart, ask your heart what its story is. Write your heart story in a paragraph or two. You can choose to journal, and you're encouraged to journal about the experiences afterwards, and also, if you want, you can draw. One of the exercises is about what lives in my heart. And this came from a meditation where I went deep into my meditation, and I literally saw a heart shape, you know, that we draw for Valentine's Day. And a door opened up, and then I saw a field of wildflowers inside this heart. So that one is pick a card and go into meditation to see what lives in your heart as shown to you by meditating on the image. And this time, instead of writing, draw a heart shape on the page following this exercise, then draw, write, or collage what you saw and felt using the heart as a frame, even breaking through the frame if you feel called to do so. And, of course, you could also journal about it. So there's some where you draw, you know, there's a few where you draw. There's even one where if you're doing it in a group, you can partner off. So that you can meditate and then talk to each other about what you receive.
So this is all the exercises are just helps us to listen to what is intuitively deep within us that we so mm-hmm. often tune out in mm-hmm. the busyness of just our day-to-day world. It's
right.
And one of the things that you talked about in the very beginning was radical persistence. So this is something that, you know, if somebody sat down and said, okay, I really want to connect with my heart, so I'm going to just think about, okay, who am I?
Mm-hmm.
And they do it once, and then, or maybe even for a couple days or even a week, and just don't get to seem to get very far with that. What advice would you tell them?
One, I would check my expectations at the door about what a meditation should be and feel and what you see. Sometimes I've had people say, but I don't see things. And then I'm like, that's fine because it may come to you in words. It may come to you in a dream later. That it can take some time to be able to have a facility with meditation, if that makes sense to you, Darlene.
Sure.
To find ease with it. And that maybe you're trying, you know, there's this idea that you need to be doing it for an hour. You know, maybe if you're just starting, you sit and you breathe and you do it for a couple minutes, if that's what you can handle. It's you know, I have days where it's, like, fantastic and it flows, and there are days where I feel like I'm pulling teeth and pulling my hair out and, like, what am I doing? You know, it varies. So check your expectations about what it's like at the door. And also as to when you will actually receive the information. It would be lovely if, you know, every time you sat and meditated on the book, it came immediately. It could be that you'll do it and you don't, well, it didn't work this time. And that's fine. You go out for a walk and you go, oh. Just also
I needed to move. I needed to move to get the juices flowing.
Right. And just so people will know, I have come up with a couple other meditations since the book has been published, and I've put them on the website. And one is called Igniting the Divine Spark Within. And the other one is Plant Spirit Meditations. I do have to confess that when Linda and I were working on the book design, neither of us thought to list in the book what the plants are because we knew them. The Plant Spirit Meditation is to work with, you know, instead of picking it by, you'd pick it by the actual plant. And so just so people know, and I do list it on the website, chicory is the blue flower. Loosestrife is the purple spiky thing. They're honeysuckle berries, roses, and water lilies, which, of course, those are pretty obvious. But, you know, so not everyone would know what a chicory, a loosestrife, or the honeysuckle berry is.
And those are all the plants that you have in your book.
Yes. It's like, oops.
Just a little thing that you forgot to identify.
It's like, oops. And just know if you're on a journey to do a book, I highly recommend the copy editor. And even with that, you're going to end up with typos. My favorite typo is, it's called The Wicked Bible. And it's around James the first time, I think, that instead of having the commandment as thou shalt not commit adultery, they left out the not.
Oh, my heaven. That's a huge typo.
That's a huge typo.
That's a huge typo. Yeah. Yeah, it's. I find and I'm sure that you've found the same thing. It's a process. It is such a huge, huge process writing a book that at some point I almost felt when I was writing mine that I was just doing it for my own growth, because you mm-hmm. just grow tremendously, tremendously through the process.
Yes. I will tell you, I am not the same person I was when I started working with Linda about this. Oh, and I forgot that part of the journey is when Rochelle, the massage therapist, said to me, oh, I think you're supposed to do a set of angel cards. I was like, oh, holy crap, another thing to do? And then I just looked at her and said, but I'm going to need an artist. I'm a word person, as you can tell. I'm very verbal. That was in May. In August, I re-met Linda, who I'd met 5 years before on a trip to Ireland. And she's an artist. She has done marketing. She's a graphic artist, done all that. And it's her husband who I ended up hiring to take the photographs.
Oh, my gosh. So everything just kind of fell into place.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is such an important message, that when you just say okay, the universe really, really does conspire to make sure that it comes about. I know that I had in a very similar situation. I was talking to someone that I was bringing as a guest to speak at one of the workshops that I was doing. And I never spoke to this person before, and at the end of our conversation, she said, your guides have a really important message to tell you. Do you want to hear what it is? And I said, well, sure. And she says, you're supposed to write a book. And this was not even on my radar at all. I mean, it was like, okay, maybe 30 years, when my movement has really slowed down a lot, 40 years, I'll pin something together. And she says, no, you're supposed to write a book now. So I started with pretending, because I still couldn't wrap my mind around writing a book. I said, okay, I'm going to pretend to write a book. And I was telling everybody I'm writing a book. All of a sudden, 3 months later, I have this big manuscript. And not knowing what to do with it. So this is just hilarious. I mean, I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And we're talking about automatic writing. It's just write. Thinking all in the back of myself that I'm just pretending to do this. And I would do these women retreats on an island near where I currently live, and I would rent the entire bed and breakfast. I was a small B&B with only, could only accommodate maximum 25 women. So it made it kind of like a big sorority, lots of fun. And I just happened to be in the middle of the weekend in the B&B. Usually we're out in the woods exploring and doing adventures. But I happened to be there, and a man just happened to be come to knock on the door. And my first thing was to say, this is a private retreat. We're not renting to anyone at this B&B. And he looked at me, and he started saying, I just want to talk to somebody about the spirituality on the island, and I'm also a publisher.
Huh.
And I said, oh, okay, well, come on in. And so that was the first publisher that looked at my book, but it was like it happened out of the blue.
Right.
And that's what I love.
That was their way of, they were saying, we're not kidding.
Right, right. When things just happen out of the blue like that and you don't expect it, then you know that you're on the right track. So I have to laugh that, you just accidentally, ran into somebody who was the who was going to help you with your book and had
mm-hmm.
exactly what you needed at that time.
Right. It would not have happened, and it would not have been as beautiful without David's photographs. And the interesting thing is, Linda did the actual book design rather than the self-publishing company, and I'm sure it would have been quite okay or fine, but it wouldn't have been as gorgeous if it hadn't been Linda. And because of her experience, she was able to take the self-publishing company's template and just drop everything in perfectly.
And just do it. So one of the things that you talked about through this is passion and how that has really driven you forward.
I would say persistence more. Stubbornness.
Persistence and stubbornness, mm-hmm. that those are all important in following your dreams and in really materializing what's in your heart, which is, mm-hmm. Again, helping to open that up.
Right. And the reason I hesitate at passion, because I've read Elizabeth Gilbert's book, Big Magic, a couple times. And she really, being a little influenced a lot maybe in my thinking by this book, and she talks about how curiosity is much more important than passion. Because you can last better through curiosity. I'm probably not saying it quite correctly, but she talks about perfectionism and how that gets in the way, but curiosity and just following, it came to me, I should do this, and I was curious enough to go, okay, let me give it a try, or when I read the book Ask Your Angels, and like, okay, let me make these cards and see what I get. And, when I got the confirmation or validation through O'Brien, it was like, okay, let me try it and see what I get. just like, all right, just keep trying.
So the persistence and curiosity really help to open your heart.
Mm-hmm. Right, because I had to be really patient through the whole process because, of course, being a human being, I wanted it now. And it didn't happen now, but it happened at a good time for it. During the course of this, a friend of mine, I was living in Melrose, Massachusetts, and she said, "So you really think this is going to be published?" And I said, "Yes, I really have to believe this, or what's the point of doing it?" I've given a book talk a couple times about the book and about self-publishing, and it's like, I have these rules. The first one is believe in your project. That's the first rule. Believe in your project.
So if somebody has a hard time really connecting with their heart, they're just so left brain, as so many people are in society, and they have a hard time, like you said, seeing things or hearing things or connecting. The first step then, would you say, is to believe you can?
I think so. And I think an interesting technique is one of the exercises is stream of consciousness. Pick a meditation image, and this time, instead of meditating on the image, just start writing without thinking about whatever is triggered by the text portion of the image. Once you have finished your stream of consciousness writing, you can journal, if you choose, about what you experienced during this exercise. This exercise is about letting go. So possibly if somebody's having some difficulty and doesn't believe in themselves, this is a way that they could follow the curiosity.
By just doing the stream of consciousness writing.
Just writing. Another thing that is, I just thought of this exercise, is similar vein, but take a bunch of crayons, open the book, pick an image, and then just start scribbling and drawing. Even if you can't draw more than a stick figure, what is this trigger in you? The really, really funny things was Linda finally did the workshop I had come up with, and one of them was a drawing exercise, and I looked at it, and I finally showed her the cover of Lama Surya Das's book, Buddha Standard Time, and her clouds looked exactly like the clouds on the cover of that book.
Oh, my gosh.
I probably should get her permission to tell that story.
I think, you know, drawing really brings out what's in our unconscious.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember years and years ago, there's a doctor by the name of Dr. Bernie Siegel.
Mm-hmm.
Who,
I don't know. Bernie Siegel.
Yeah. He was one of the ones that helped people deal with, overcome, worked with a lot with cancer patients. And one of the things that he used to use in cancer therapy was having the people draw. And just like you said, and he says, and that would tell them an awful, that would tell him an awful lot on how to work with the patient, because he said, I could see an awful lot in the drawing that they could not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where they're standing in relationship to their parents or children, and how they draw those parents or children, not specifically as far as the artistic ability, but if they're drawing them
mm-hmm.
standing up or slunched over.
One person much bigger, looming bigger in the picture than others, or...
Right. That drawing can really tell us an awful lot about what is in our subconscious, our unconscious. And a lot of times, some of the trauma that we may be holding in there is what's preventing us from opening our heart. So I can see
actually...
how drawing.
Right.
Yeah. I can see that
drawing could be...
There's
actually a field called art therapy.
Oh, right. So drawing, if those people that perhaps can't meditate or look at the flower, like you were saying, the pictures, the beautiful photographs, and don't see anything, that drawing on their own, just drawing what comes out of them will really tell them and help them a lot.
Right, and again, they could use the image, an image from the book, to
right.
be the trigger point. And one way they could choose it is the images are numbered 1 through 56, and you could just have a number pop in your head and say, that's the one I'm going to work with.
Right.
But again, it's understanding. Yeah, there are rules in types of meditation, but in some ways there are no rules, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. Yeah. Because meditation is, well, meditation itself is such a broad term on what you consider meditation to be. So you mentioned before that you're a very, very different person after writing this book than you were in the beginning. What are some of the ways that this has helped you open your heart?
I'm more trusting that things will happen, you know, because if it doesn't happen now, you know, you go, oh, my God, it's not going to happen. But, you know, and I know that I'm really good at being persistent and following through. I think in some ways, I've been a knitter for years, you know, since I was about 13, you know, so you in some ways work with color that way. I've done beading. I've done all sorts of things. I think in some ways it has sharpened my visual eye, if that makes sense, and just letting go because of how it should be, because it started with the idea of angel cards, morphed into meditation cards, then morphed into a book. You know, it's like, of course, checking with my angels and guides the whole time, you know, is this something that's fine? And yes. And sometimes people would change, say, oh, you need a change of wording here. And I check with them, and sometimes they say, that's okay. And sometimes, no. So it's the flow of, you know, and I think I sharpened my skills, if that's the correct term, as an intuitive, as a psychic. You know, just working more and more and working down into my heart.
You know,
becoming more comfortable at what I'm doing.
You talk a lot about checking with your angels and guides. How would the average person know that they're actually checking with their angels and guides, or they're just it's their own mind that they're hearing when they listen?
That is actually something that, in my view, psychics need to determine. If I feel that I'm too close to the question, I will actually check with some other psychic. So a lot that can be done through meditation and the knowledge that comes in, or saying to them, you know, I'm open to having you come to me in my dreams and sorting out dreams. Sometimes it's just paying attention to your gut. You know, is something making you feel like, nope, don't want to do that? Then it's learning to pay attention. Sometimes it's just a little thought in your head. Like, before I started doing all this work, this was back in the 1980s when I still lived in Illinois, I thought about getting a pet, and I'm like, maybe, I mean, you know, if I do, I'll get two cats, and yada, yada, you know? And suddenly one day I'm driving around town, living in Champaign, Illinois at the time, and suddenly this voice in my head kept saying, go to the Humane Society, go to the Humane Society, go to the Humane. Sometimes it can be that strong. Sometimes it's a little bit more of a whisper. Sometimes it's suddenly you'll be attracted to a book. You know, and you really feel like you need to read that book. So it's paying attention to the whispers. It's paying attention, you know, being mindful, I suppose. I know that's rather amorphous.
it's hard to explain, yeah.
You could start to do pendulum work. And that, you know, and any of these, like, if you're using divinatory tools, it's practice. It's practice, practice, practice. I was not great at the automatic writing at first. It came in words, parts of words. We still don't do punctuation.
Oh. So it's, you know, just like any other skill, it takes practice.
Yes. And it's important, if you're going to be doing this kind of work, is grounding and clearing and meditation. You know, some form of centering, so that you're in balance. And that, for me, and I would recommend it to others, is checking in with yourself. When I started doing, and I still will do this, it's like, is this answer mine or is it yours? And lo and behold, on occasions they will say, it's you. Not us.
That's not what we want you to do.
Yeah. So, because you can, you know, you have your own filters, your own belief system, your own cultural, you know, acculturation, and things that you really kind of want to do, and it's like you're hoping that's the answer. And if it's one of those where, you know, I really think I would like to do this, and the answer's no, well, I think that's a lot clearer. It's not you answering. It's like,
okay.
Oh, drat, okay.
Are you sure?
I'm like, yes, we're sure.
So do you check with your angels and guides every day?
Almost every day. Occasionally, schedule, you know, is a little off, but I try to do it every day. And it's not hours and hours. It's like sitting down first thing in the morning practically, and, okay, what do you have to tell me today? And it's keeping that connection going.
So it's just, again, that continuation of working on it. Continuously and being persistent with it. It sounds, you know, with the different skills that you have, you know, being a life coach, you know, and intuitive at the same time, that it's got to be extremely rewarding work. And I'm sure you've got many stories to tell about people that you've helped to open their heart, either through the sessions or through your book.
Some of it is actually people come for, you know, they know they want to make a change, say, in channeled angel readings, and they know that they want to make a change, but they're not sure what it is they should do. And sometimes it's, okay, they're saying you've got a lot of healing in your hands, you could explore blah, 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 blah. You know, and what anybody going to any reader, psychic, intuitive, is it's the energy of the day, you know. And as James Wanless, who said to me one time when I was having a reading with him, he's the creator of Voyager Tarot Cards. He said, if you like the reading, it's up to you to go out and make it happen. If you don't like the reading, it's up to you to go out and make it not happen. Because, you know, this is the energy of the day if you, you know, follow through with what they're suggesting. I mean, I was suddenly, a number of people were being asked to study deep ecology. I had no clue what that was. And I think there's actually a field called deep ecology. I did a reading once for this gentleman, and it was suggested that he really work on doing things in sustainable growth and transition towns. And and at the end he said, you know, you're more accurate than you know. Like, oh, thank you. And again, I'm not a doctor, but the angels and guides, if you have health concerns, will come through and tell you energetically what they see. I had done a reading for a woman at an event and then saw her some other time later, and I, of course, I don't remember a lot of this stuff. It just comes out and it goes off to wherever it needs to be. And she was saying to the people, some people in a group that did a party at her house, like, and she's the one who told me, get your resume ready. And then 2 weeks later, the company came out and said they were making all these terrible changes. So it's being able to help people find their path. You know, or if they've got something they're nervous about, you know, if the angels and guides come through and say, you know, it's going to be a little bumpy, but you're going to be okay. So to give people that relief.
And that's a big relief, and that really is, because sometimes we just, when things get a little bumpy, go into the fear mode and not relax into the change. And I noticed that you also stated at one time that you help people move from fear to hope. So how do you help them do that?
That's, I think the big thing is helping them see that there are possibilities. I have a client, life coaching client, who was so bound up in a very limited vision, and a simple piece of homework broke open her vision because she realized it's one of the things where it's difficult how much you can actually say without breaching confidentiality. But she, for reasons, had moved. Things had happened, and oh my God, what's going to happen? And through a simple piece of homework and looking at photos of where she used to live, it was like, oh, that's where I want to be. So she was in such a stuck mode. She didn't know what she, you know, panicky. She didn't know where she was going to be, what she was going to do. And I said, okay, then that's our new goal, is to get you back to where you used to live and get you a job there. And we did it.
Just by looking and opening up possibilities.
Yes, right. So another client, and I have to say that one of my teachers at the professional coaching school I went to, which is University of New Hampshire, has a thing called, it's like the lifeline. And you can have two or three lines. One is, you know, life events. One can be work events. And then what you're feeling at those times. And I had a client do it, and she realized that she'd been carrying some anger since she was a child. And again, I'm not a therapist, so it's like she wanted to deal with that, she would have to go see a therapist. But it's like, you know, it occurred to me she was having clutter issues and stuff, and by the kinds of homework, it was like, oh, okay. You know, so it's like finding ways to get people to think about themselves in new ways. And it really depends on the person and what their goal is, how that plays out. because somebody else could feel stuck, but having them look at it, it turns out, you know, look at a book of box of photographs is not going to happen, you know, because that's not what it's going to be for them.
Right, but it's all about expanding their vision, opening up possibilities, and see the unlimited nature if they connect to their heart and follow their passion.
Right, and part of it could be doing some basic guided meditation. One of the exercises in the book is about energy blocks. And so having clients scan their body and figure out where energy is stuck and then literally interacting with that energy block. What does it feel like? Does it have a smell, an odor, a texture? You know, you might get none of that. You just might know that it's there. And then asking it, do you have a name? You know, it's interesting. I had a client whose energy block was named Bastion, which means wall or fort. She didn't know what it meant. She didn't know what it meant. So for those of you who don't know what the word bastion means, because I think it's an old French word or old Norman French word, it means like wall or fortress.
Wow.
And then the next step is to say to the energy deck, what do you need from me to becoming a loving, healing energy? And you might have to work with this energy block over some time.
Right, but just being aware that there are different ways you can handle what is present in your life, in your body, by opening up to all these possibilities. Wow.
Right.
Wow. That's, it's not only a beautiful tabletop book, but it is very, it's just a great, great tool in helping someone who wants to connect more with their heart and expand their vision of what life can be all about. It's really a great book. So we've just about run out of time right now, and I want to make sure that people know how to contact you and how to get a copy of your book.
Okay, well, my website is katherinesamuelson.com, and it's KatherineSamuelson. You can reach me at klsamuelson@yahoo.com, 781-799-7332 is my cell phone. And the book, you can get it through the book page, through either the self-publishing company, and it's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. It's an iBook, a Nook book, and a Kindle book. And I think I don't have one of those devices, but I think it would be stunning on an iPad or something.
One of the few people that don't have.
Yes. I like actual books. What can I say?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm with you there, although I'll tell you, in the process of moving from one state to another, it is a lot to pack up. And that is one of my challenges right now, is deciding what's going with me and what not.
It'll be good for the soul.
Right. Thank you. Thank you, Katherine, so very much for just a wonderful, informative hour that I'm sure has helped a number of us open our heart, or at least find out, you know, what we can use to help us in that.
Well, thank you for letting me be on the show. It was really fun, and I hope we stay in touch, Darlene.
I do, too. So take care, and good luck with your future endeavors, and we may be talking to you again soon.
Thanks, and good luck on your move.
Thanks so much.